Sports Radio 1290. CFRW, Winnipeg.
Yeah! Time to get a lift.
A division of Bell Media. Sports Radio 1290 presents the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 3 hours of in-depth analysis, insight, and opinion into Canada's game. Now, here's Drew, Richard, and Ezra.
Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm your host, Drew Mindell, joined in studio by Richard Polk and Ezra Ginsberg. Michael Remus is operating the R-Desk. You can follow us on Twitter, at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. And, of course, the website is www.illegalcurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We're pleased to welcome to the program a very special guest, Bob Murdoch, former head coach of the Winnipeg Jets. Welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
It's great to be here.
We appreciate you giving of your time, Bob. Thanks very much. Bob, you had a long and storied career, both coaching and on the ice. You played in Montreal. You played for Los Angeles. You played in Atlanta. You coached in San Jose. You coached in Germany. Where does your time in Winnipeg rank amongst in your career? Where do you rank it?
Well, it ranks up close to the top. First of all, it's always a pleasure to coach in one of the Canadian cities because there's so much awareness and so much following, and the fans are so dedicated and so knowledgeable, and so you sort of have to stay on your toes. I know that there's reporters every day, and they're questioning you what you do in practice. They're questioning what you do in for your lineups and that. Whereas, you know, when you're down in Atlanta and some of these other cities, these southern cities, where the following isn't so great, sometimes you get a little lost and you sort of get a little careless and not be on your toes. But in Winnipeg, you had to be sharp and be ready every day because everybody questioned every move.
Bob, you coached in the playoffs, and obviously in the playoffs was the whiteout, the traditional whiteout, as loud as crowds you're going to find around hockey. Can you talk about the emotion in the building on those nights and how it felt, what the passion was like and how it was flowing through the building?
Well, it's special when you come to periods like that. I know, in the playoffs when the building was completely sold out and you're playing against rivalries like Edmonton or Calgary or whoever, it's really special when you get and you see the fans so involved and so carried away. It's now, you know, in Calgary they got the sea of red, you know, in Vancouver they got the white, and then, you know, they have the orange in different cities and different things like that. But it's really special when the fans get involved, and it really helps the team, and it really shows the emotional involvement of everybody in the community.
In 1989-90, you'll obviously fondly remember the Jets were up 3-1 against the eventual Stanley Cup champions.
Well, I don't remember that fondly, that we're up 3-1. That we
yeah, not fondly, yeah.
If the series had been a best of five, you would have remembered it very fondly.
Yeah, that's right.
Bob, if the Jets had got past the Oilers, how far do you think that team could have gone?
I think we could have gone all the way. You know, the Oilers went all the way that year after they beat us. Mm-hmm. Probably the turning point, I guess Alpo Sunen was one of my assistant coaches, and I know we're up 3-1, and we had Edmonton to a certain point figured out. You know, they wanted to match lines, and we were able to keep some of their big guns off the ice. And suddenly, our coach Alpo, with a little bit of inexperience, he sort of mentioned that we had them all figured out. Edmonton didn't know what they were doing; that they were keeping guys off the ice, and he basically laid out our plan to the press. And at that point, the series sort of turned, and unfortunately, we ended up losing it.
You know, I'm going to follow up on that one. I was a little bit younger then, so I may not have had the insight that I have now. What was your plan to shut down? I mean, that was a dynamic Oilers team. So what sort of strategy were you employing that, led you to a 3-1?
Well, they wanted to keep their top scorers away from our checkers. So we were playing our checkers quite often and being able to put in our top players as well. And so we're able to limit the ice time that the Messiers and that were actually getting. They were so concerned with matching up with our team that we sort of were able to dictate the flow of the game. Unfortunately, they had some young players in those days, and they were very good players. And what happened was they started to use these younger players and sort of mix a little better, and then they sort of turned the tide on what we were doing.
We're joined on...
But everything in playoffs is so... I mean, you know, it depends on your goaltending making a key save, and it depends on, you know, staying healthy and having a little bit of luck and that type of thing. And in a short series like that, I know sometimes 7 games seems for an eternity, but in a short series like that, things can change so quickly. We see it in the playoffs, you know, this year with some of the teams down 3-1 or 3-0, and they come back and they're able to compete and get back into the series. You know, look what happened to Vancouver in that first series against Chicago.
That's right. Yeah, well, we saw it in...
So things do change.
Sure. I mean, we saw it in even specific games where a team would jump out to a 3-0 lead or a 4-0 lead, and the other team made a comeback. I mean, it seemed like no lead was safe, especially in these playoffs, and I guess the same is true in the late 80s, early 90s. Now, we're joined on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show by Bob Murdoch, former head coach of the Winnipeg Jets. Bob, in your time in Winnipeg, do you have a favorite memory that comes to mind or a favorite player that you were able to coach?
Well, I think there are a lot of players that were sort of special. You know, I was very happy to have the opportunity of coaching Dale Hawerchuk, who's sort of a superstar and a legend in Winnipeg, and he's quite a good player. You know, but we had, I think one of the biggest, I guess, memories would be the fact that we tried to play four lines, roll them. We played all six defensemen, and we played, you know, both our goalies, and we sort of rotated them, and it was a real team effort. Like, I think the most rewarding, as I say, was the fact that everybody responded to the roles that we gave them. They accepted the roles, and they performed the roles, and our team was really a team. It wasn't just one or two individuals. It was just a group of guys that went out there and played for each other. And it was just a lot of fun. And I think that, you know, the fans got caught up in it. And you know, we didn't rely on any one little element of the game. We had a pretty much a complete game going. And it was very rewarding.
Bobby, during your time here, you won the Jack Adams Trophy for, you know, Coach of the Year.
The curse.
The curse, that's what they say. Where does that...
Well, what happens with the Jack Adams is it changes expectations.
Right.
When I came in that first year, you know, the Jets didn't... they're going through a tough period, and they didn't have much success, or they hadn't had much success. We sort of jumped out and made great improvements in standings and the stats and everything, and everybody was really happy with it. The next year, with the success that we had that first year, everybody was expecting us to make the same improvement, the same percentage improvement, which obviously didn't happen. And as a result, you know, I got a lot more credit than I deserved for that first year. And I probably got a little more blame than I deserved for the second year, but that's the nature of the game.
Do you feel like, Bob, that you were given a fair shot to kind of see it through a little bit more than the 2 seasons that you were here?
Well, it's sort of a long story. Mike Smith was the general manager, and he and I, unfortunately, did see eye to eye in a lot of things, and so I think it was more caused by a falling out of Mike Smith and my own relationship, you know, than the players themselves. You know, we made a few changes in the lineup. We ended up moving Hawerchuk and Dave Allett, and the players we got in return didn't quite perform as much, and it sort of broke up the chemistry of the team, Mike stopped communicating with me, and it was a very difficult year for the team, for me, for the coaching staff, and I'm sure for Mike Smith as well. But sort of the chemistry, I guess, broke down, and the relationships broke down, and as a result, there was a casualty. And it was the Winnipeg Jets not making the playoffs and me losing my job.
If you had been a Russian head coach, it's likely that Mike Smith would have communicated with you a little bit better, probably.
Perhaps. Well, Mike was a different guy. I don't want to go talk about it in public or anything like that. Mike was a different guy, and he had different thoughts, and unfortunately, as I say, we sort of didn't see eye to eye and on some of the moves and everything like that, and unfortunately, things didn't work out, and so I was sort of the man on the totem pole that was took the fall, I guess.
Bob, you spoke about Dale Hawerchuk. You know, to me, one of the more underappreciated stars or superstars of you know, the past 20, 30 years. Can you speak a bit about how talented he was and how sometimes he maybe didn't get the credit that he so deserved?
Well, he was a special player. He was a very gifted player. Unfortunately, players like a Joe Sakic, for instance, when he was first drafted by Quebec, he was a superstar, and he but the Quebec Nordiques weren't going anywhere. They didn't play very well. They were a losing team. He would get his 100 points, and he sort of developed some habits that weren't conducive to a team winning, but they were conducive to him getting a lot of points and everything. In a way, Dale was a little like that. Dale was on a team where he had exceptional talent, and Dale was very good. I mean, he was very gifted. He saw the ice. He understood the game. He had a feel for the game. He had vision and that. Dale had to make some adjustments in his game to become a winner, and so it was tougher on Dale, I guess, than some of the other players. But he is a special player. He was a special player, and he was exceptionally good to Winnipeg and to the franchise.
Is there you coached for a couple of years here, was there one player who you felt was underappreciated by fans and maybe people around the National Hockey League who never you never thought got the due credit that they so deserved?
No, I don't think so. I think Freddie Olsen was very good. Teppo Nieminen was an excellent player. We had a lot of really good, hardworking, honest players, and I don't know that it's fair to say whether or not they were accepted or whether or not they got the recognition they deserved or not. Mm-hmm. I think the team as a whole, when it performed so well that first year I was there, got recognition as being good. And I think, all of the players felt good about themselves and felt as though they're a part of it and felt really rewarded by it. It's when a team starts to falter and doesn't reach expectations, that finger-pointing starts and guys are not fulfilled and they don't feel a part of it and things don't sort of click for anybody or the team. And so, in all fairness, I can't say that there was any one player that wasn't recognized for what he did. I think Dale got recognized. He was an exceptional player, but he reaped the benefits from it as well. He was very good. He was very good in Winnipeg. He was very good after Winnipeg. He was on some of those championship teams at the World Cup level, or in the Russian Canadian battles and stuff like that. Dale was an exceptional player.
Bob, we have one final question for you, and then we'll let you continue to enjoy your Saturday morning, and it's a very important one. What is the status of your mustache?
It's white. It used to be black, but now it's white. I guess that's just a part of aging. But my mustache started, I mean, I don't have an exceptional mustache or anything like that, but the story behind my mustache, when I first started playing with the Canadiens, there were very, very few players that wore mustaches. I happened to get a bad cut in my lip, and I couldn't shave for a week or two, and so to hide the cut and not being able to shave, I grew a mustache, and it sort of stayed on. As a matter of fact, I had it on all the time, my mustache. Never ever shaved it off over the years. One night, I decided to shave it. And my two kids came in the morning after that evening. The two kids hadn't seen me, but they came running into the bedroom. They jumped on the bed, and they were sort of playing, and they sort of looked at me. And then they took a second look, and then they took a third look, and they're sort of in awe. They just kept staring. And I think they thought my wife had a different man in bed that morning. But they didn't recognize me without my mustache. So I had to grow it back again because I just wanted my kids to sort of see me again as their father, I guess.
Bob Murdoch, former head coach of the Winnipeg Jets, thanks very much for joining us this morning.
By the way, I am a Jets fan and a Winnipeg fan, and I truly hope that they do get the franchise. I'm sure that people will support the team, and it's very exciting. I'm in Kenora right now at my summer place. There isn't a day go by that I don't run into somebody, and they're asking me, are the Jets coming back? Are they going to get the Jets? Because out here in Kenora, they're excited about it, and I'm sure all in all this, the province of Manitoba, they're excited about it, and it would be really a nice thing to see NHL hockey back in Winnipeg.
Bob, can you do me a favor if you run into Mike Richards? He had a really good tweet, so can you just tell him that I said hi, because I know he's also from Kenora. So.
Well, I'll tell you one thing is I'll gladly say hi to Mike Richards, but one of the things that new management should try to get a hold of Mike Richards, because he's a heck of a player, isn't he?
Oh, sure, absolutely.
I suspect that he's not going to be extracated from Philadelphia that easily.
He won't be available. Yeah. Well, all we have to do is get the territorial right. rights there. Steinbeck and Kanar and get these players like Taves and Richards to play for the Jets, and a couple will be there sooner than we think.
Well, all I'm going to say is Bob Murdoch for commissioner in that case.
There you go.
Bob Murdoch.
Okay, bye now. Good luck with your show.
Thanks very much, Bob. Appreciate that.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah. That was great. That was a lot of fun. Let's go to break. When we come back, we'll do a quick segment, and then we have Eddie Olczyk coming up at the top of the hour. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, 10:53 in the morning. Still to come on the program, Eddie Olczyk in a couple minutes, and from the National Post, Michael Trakos. In case you missed any of our interviews, they will be available on iTunes. Search for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on iTunes, subscribe, and get the show automatically sent to your iPod each and every weekend.
Bob Murdoch wasn't holding anything back. I like it.
No, Bob Murdoch wasn't. It was, I mean, obviously, I had no idea about Alpo Suonen talking in the media too much, but I guess that's, an interesting dynamic from 8990. If anybody remembers that, feel free to give us a call, 780-1290, area code 204-780-1290 if you're calling from out of town. Interesting his comments about Mike Smith, you know, their lack of communication at that point.
Well, it's because Mike was speaking in Russian, Drew.
Yeah, well, it's, more or less probably the case. We got an email from Derek Kuhn. He says the following: I'm a longstanding and passionate Jets fan who was torn to shreds when the team left. At the time that he left, he was playing in a band called Guy Smiley, and they had an opportunity to do some traveling and everything else. The greatest part about that opportunity was meeting people that knew of Winnipeg and the Jets. It made me realize that even then, before the serious hit of the internet, the world was a small place. They would use their song, The Canadian Way, as their encore every night, and it was one of the best feelings seeing people who often did not even speak English singing along word for word. Many of the fans shared in our loss of the city's team. This proved how valuable an NHL franchise is to our city. Sure, we don't need it to be a great city, but it certainly helps take us to the next level in terms of local pride and international recognition. He sincerely hopes that the team name is called the Jets and puts our city on the map as it carries so much history. Great email, Derek. We appreciate that very much. And I think he's got a lot of valid points there, especially the part about how it really was a way of for people worldwide to identify with the city of Winnipeg. Now, somebody wrote, I don't remember where it was, either online or whatever. As soon as, when you write the check, you get to determine the team name. But I do think that True North has to think long and hard about keeping the Jets team name for the passion and history and influence that it holds throughout the world.
Drew, we've been talking about this a lot. And I'll let Richie jump in. We've been talking a lot about this name business for the last 3 or 4 weeks or whatever. And I have to think that they were thinking about the keeping the Jets. So if they...
Sounds like more lately.
If they decide to go with a name that isn't the Jets, then they obviously decided that, okay, we know that the fans want the Jets name, and isn't there a petition right now? There's like 5,000 people that have signed a petition.
Everybody wants
it's pretty
the name.
Clear. I mean, everyone wants it.
Give them what
but
they want.
Maybe they have other reasons, and then we'll have to adopt the reincarnation of our second NHL team.
Give them what they want at this point. I mean, everybody. You watch Free Press TV, had a 5-minute short thing about interviewing people on the street. What do they want? Every single person said Jets. All the calls here say Jets. All the polls say Jets. I mean, come on. What? Obviously, they own the team. They can do what they want with it. But everybody in this city wants the Jets.
Yep.
More or less, I think.
Capture the history, and you can't. Never mind the brand factor and all the things we've spoken about before. You capture history. There's an identity there. And who was it? It was a Gordon Sinclair had a good article about that, about the capturing the loyalty of the past. And I just think that there's every reason to call it the Jets, and I just don't see the reason to change it.
Now, this will sort of be. I expect you'll have the answer to it. Do we take back the history? Prior to 95?
Why not? Phoenix is leaving anyways. Why not?
Yeah. Like, so what, is...
Like, Phoenix won't be there for more than a year.
No, we know that. I mean, unless,
So they're going to take it to, like, Seattle or Quebec?
No.
It's not going to Seattle, by the way.
No. Seattle needs an arena. If the NBA
Gary, let me quickly get in there. The NBA left. You were just going to say that, Drew. Key Arena, they left, and Seattle went to Oklahoma City. Similar kind of Colorado. They leave, Quebec leaves to Colorado, and they're a very good team. Anyhow, Gary Bettman and David Stern are boys, quote-unquote. You think Gary Bettman's going to go to Seattle to the same arena David Stern said was not adequate for NBA play and go play there? No.
I also don't think Seattle is a viable hockey town.
Well, that's also true.
I mean, apparently there's no arenas at all. There's got no minor hockey program. You need to establish in a city that wants you. and none of these cities want them. You know where they should go back to?
That's interesting.
Go back to Hartford.
But you know what's interesting? How the NHL, maybe the NHL has a backwards thinking going on here. The NHL, as he seems to drop an NHL team in a city, okay?
Yeah.
NHL team in a city, and then develop the minor hockey program. What about 10 years before, you know, dropping a minor hockey program in Phoenix 10 years ago, then trying to bring a team there 10 years after? Maybe they're doing things in reverse.
Well, based on everything we know about the NHL, that would doing things.
What about investing in the product at the grassroots level?
Well, that's the problem. And it's going to kill the grassroots if the team leaves. I'm sorry, that doesn't make any sense. Build it up, exactly. Build it up, get people's interest in it, and then make them clamor for your product, and then put a team in there.
There's the next city's Quebec City. I mean, it's not up for debate.
They don't have an arena yet. They don't have an arena yet.
How about Hamilton?
So in 2 years, Hamilton, the Cops Coliseum is old.
It could be
renovated. It needs to
sell a few BlackBerries.
Quebec City.
And Hamilton's got so many other headaches attached with it that they are not going to be easily solved.
What about inside Toronto?
Oh, that's what I'm saying. I think the Leafs aren't going to allow that. There's so many headaches involved there that it doesn't that I don't think those are easily done. Quebec City is the natural next destination.
Yeah.
They need a new arena.
Yeah, yes. It might not happen
in
2 years.
Put in some private money and build the arena. It's not rocket science.
It doesn't hear my ranting voice.
I am. We need our $400 million arena with its moat. No, you don't. You need a well-placed, properly sized $180 million arena that people want to go to. Very little, last time I checked, there's very little correlation between NHL hockey and multiple moats around your arena.
Well, I mean, it aesthetically pleasing, Drew.
I don't care. Do you think that the MTS Center is not aesthetically pleasing?
Well, if they had a moat, it would be.
Well, maybe we'll just make Portage. Maybe we'll just make Winnipeg Venice of the North. Put a moat down Portage Avenue.
Venice of the North.
How about that? You know,
who needs cops when you can have a lot of water?
No, there won't be any crime. Nobody will be able to swim, so they'll need moats instead. Let's go to break. When we come back, Eddie Olczyk will join us from Comcast Sportsnet, former Winnipeg Jet. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290. Down 1 hour to go. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on Sports Radio 1290. I'm your host, Drew Mindell, joined in studio by Ezra Ginsberg and Richard Pollock. Michael Remus is operating the R desk over at www.illegalcurve.com, and we're pleased to be joined now on the line by Eddie Olczyk.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
Eddie Olczyk, former Winnipeg Jets, now with Comcast Sportsnet in Chicago, with Versus, with NBC. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Good afternoon, guys. How are you?
Very well. Thanks very much for joining us and for giving of your time. We appreciate it very much. We sort of want to break down the interview into two parts, a little bit about with the Stanley Cup preview, and then a little bit about the your time in Winnipeg and your history as a Winnipeg Jet. Starting with Boston, Vancouver, to your eye, what is the key matchup between Vancouver and Boston starting Wednesday night?
Yeah, well, I would say that when you look at the team scheme and how they play and what the philosophies are with Boston, I think they try to out-defend you. I don't know if Boston can outscore the Vancouver Canucks. I think it was proven in a series against Tampa Bay as when the games were low scoring. 1-0, game 7, 2-0, 3-1. Three of their four wins were very low scoring, and I think that's the way that they want to play. They want to be tight to the vest. They got to get their power play going, but at the end of the day, they want to try to out-defend people because I just don't believe it, that they have enough offensive finish. They can, but I don't think it's consistent enough to play against the Vancouver Canucks. And for Vancouver, they got a lot of depth. They got some big bodies, an outstanding power play, a real good defense. I think a very mobile defense when healthy, not knowing the situations on the back end. So, I mean, you have a team that wants to out-defend the opponent, and you got an opponent that doesn't mind pushing the pace offensively. So it should be one heck of a Stanley Cup final. And then you have the matchup in goal, of course, with Tim Thomas and Roberto Luongo. And, look, if either team has average goaltending, the other team's going to win. And all you want your goaltenders to do is be consistent. And I think that both these goaltenders have done that to this point in the playoffs.
Eddie, if Manny Malhotra returns for the Stanley Cup Finals, do you think he'll be the same player that he was before his eye injury?
I think only time will tell. It's great, and news that that he has been able to get back on the ice, and first and foremost is that, you know, his vision for getting his hockey life, but for the rest of his life, will be as normal as it could be. So, you know, taking that a step further, yeah, if he comes back, it makes Vancouver deeper. It makes Vancouver much better in the faceoff circle. But again, timing, he's been out a long time. That's a tough spot to get into. But Manny Malhotra is a veteran guy. He's been through the rigors of the playoffs before, but he hasn't played in a long time. I don't care how much you practice or how much you train, there's something to getting back into the mix. And for the Vancouver Canucks, this is the Stanley Cup final. So, you know, if he does play, obviously it is a great story, a very special one. But the impact that he will have, I would say would probably be very minor in the essence of, you know, contributing offensively or defensively. But, you know, the winning faceoffs and those types of things, he is excellent at, and I'm sure timing will be an issue for him.
And final question here on the Stanley Cup Finals. Do you, in terms of Boston's defense, do you see them having a big problem with the Canucks' overall team speed?
I don't believe so. I think that's very similar as far as the speed, the depth between Tampa and Vancouver. Maybe Vancouver a little quicker. I wouldn't say that they're a lot quicker, but I think just a little bit when you go from defense to the forwards. But that is certainly an area that you would think that the Vancouver would want to play is a quick game and play below the goal line and try to create offense.
Transitioning over to the Winnipeg and the National Hockey League, obviously, you know, your name is tossed about always in a positive aspect, and talking about the Jets and the history of the Jets, and there's a lot of talk about the team returning and an announcement hopefully being made this week. But, you know, I was watching an old video, the last game, the Jets against Detroit, Game 6 in 1996, and there's a video of you, and I'm sure pictures of you, your head up against the stanchion on the bench, and you just look very dejected. And did you ever think at that point in time when you were, in that moment, did you ever think that the NHL would ever return to Winnipeg?
Probably not. I enjoyed my 6-plus years there as a member of the Winnipeg Jets, and more importantly, a member of the community, and became entrenched there, lived there, you know, almost year-round with my kids and doing community service, and obviously my job over the course of the hockey season. But, you know, I can go back to that time and remember like it was just yesterday. I mean, it was just a very surreal experience to think that the team was leaving. And, you know, look, you know, nothing is forever, but you live that and you see the looks on the people, the faces and the expressions of all the people at the Winnipeg Arena and talking to people in the community and the neighborhoods and the schools and everything else. And it was very, very hard to stay focused in that moment of knowing that, the Winnipeg Jets were going to be leaving. And now, look, I always hoped against hope, and I always knew that that the Winnipeg, the city of Winnipeg and the province of Manitoba, the passion for hockey and the love for it, but, you know, it comes down, it is a business, we all know that, the financial wherewithal of whether or not it could come back. But long-winded, I didn't think at that particular time, but I think as years went on, seeing the dynamics of the National Hockey League, a salary cap in place, a little bit more of a fair playing ground all the way through the National Hockey League, you know, I always felt that in the right economic system, the right economy, a new building, a little bit more better sharing of revenues amongst the team, and I thought that it would be, obviously a great place, and hope against hope at some point that they would get a team back.
Eddie, when you gave your famous speech at the Jets' funeral, did you ever think that that would be a rallying cry for people to use to see the NHL returning here? Because I'll tell you now, everyone references that.
Yeah, we're considering, I guess they're my friends, but guys like Glenn Healy and Ray Ferraro would have those as their answering machine messages or their ring phones, or their doorbell would ring if somehow I would be on there. So I think there might be some gratuity coming my way for all the years of the phone ringing. Maybe I should get a few bucks out of that. But You know, I think anybody that knew me as a member of the Winnipeg Jets, who I took great pride of representing the city and the organization, and when I got that opportunity to speak to really all Winnipeg Jet fans and all the people that were at the Winnipeg Arena, I was speaking from the heart, and I was sincere about that, and you know, I think that I'm very proud of what I said and what I meant, and like I said, I feel like I'm a long time Winnipegger, even though I've moved on and now live in Chicago, my hometown, but I feel like I'm a part of that community, always will be, and hope against hope that someday that the National Hockey League will return to the city of Winnipeg.
Eddie, we'll let you go on this final question. I mean, I'm sure you've seen, you've probably seen video or heard about the fever pitch that Winnipeg, you know, has been at, waiting for the official announcement. Have you been keeping tabs of the return of the NHL the last couple of weeks? You know, do you see it happening in the next couple, this week or next?
Yeah, well, that I don't know, but I have been following it, and I've been following it for a long time, and it doesn't surprise me. Because of the want and the hunger to, get the National Hockey League back to a National Hockey League city like Winnipeg. And I have been following it. I have a lot of friends that still live there. And I'm feeling what they're going through. And at some point, I'm sure there will be closure and hopefully in the end, not going to make everybody happy, but there will be a decision at some point, and then we can further have a discussion on, moving forward. But I have been following it very closely and hanging on the whims of the media just like everybody else.
Eddie Olczyk, we thank you very much for your time this morning on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Okay, guys, have a great day.
Take care. You too, Eddie. Thank you, Eddie. He's a few times, second or third time on this program, and he always gives honest answers, and he speaks from the heart, and it's great to see, I just think, for the players that really bought into the idea of playing in Winnipeg, I think that they've gotten a lot out of it. There just seems to be an emotional bond that a lot of these guys who played in Winnipeg, you see it with Eddie, you see it with Timu, you see it with Teppo, these guys who really...
Chuck's back every year.
The guys who really made a commitment and they had a bond with the city that I think that is, it's
Andrew
paying it forward.
Andrew Farron said it best, Drew. He said, you're going to be able to play against in front of all the fans as opposed to playing in the other arenas with not many fans, and if you don't like that...
You probably don't want him
on the team anyways.
Well, Richie, the thing is, I think the reason why, that speech, it wasn't so much that people thought he was going to bring the cup back. It's because he spoke for all of the other players were feeling about how much he cared about the city of Winnipeg.
It seemed honest.
And was upset that the team was leaving. So I think that was why, because he was speaking for everybody, fans, whatever. That's why he's associated.
Yeah. Speaks from the heart.
He seemed honest, which is good. I mean, that's all you can ever ask is you want to see honesty. I mean, you see cliche, canned answers. Yep. This is a guy who was speaking honestly, and he spoke passionately, and that's all you can ever ask. Let's head to break. When we come back, we're going to open up the phone lines, take some phone calls on some of the topics we've discussed.
Mm-hmm.
We still have Michael Trakos of the National Post at the bottom of the hour. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, 11:17 in the morning. We just heard from Eddie Olczyk. We're going to hear from him right again.
And I would like to talk to all those young kids out there that are Winnipeg Jet fans. We will always be Winnipeg Jets. And when this team wins the Stanley Cup, it's coming back to Winnipeg!
One of the all-time famous interview clips. I mean, it's just a great... I mean, first of all, the fact that guys are around the NHL are using it to bust on him by playing it as their answering machine messages is amazing. I mean, that's what he was saying. There were, guys like Ferraro, they're using it as their voicemail or whatever.
That was funny, yeah.
That's very funny. It really is... I mean, not that you ever really have an opportunity to make these fabulous historic speeches in Winnipeg, but it is one of those, where were you when Eddie made that speech sort of moments.
Yeah.
I
didn't get in. It was... Two-pack, I can get in the building.
Drew, do you remember where you were when he gave that speech?
I was center ice.
I was watching at home.
I was on TV.
I don't remember where I was.
Positive it was on TV.
I'm sure it was on TV.
I didn't get the center ice package.
Well, I was there. I mean, it was a madhouse. getting into that arena. They were just, I mean, I don't think they'd ever allow it again. There was like a human stampede of people through all the doors.
Late, you couldn't get in.
Well, do you think Sheldon remembers where he was?
He wasn't there. I don't know.
He doesn't remember where he was last night.
Oh, I guess we're taking shots at my father now. Is that how it's working?
I love your dad.
I didn't.
Yeah. Sheldon slash dad. Again, I love Sheldon slash dad.
Sheldon slash dad after last week. 780-1290, area code 204-780-1290. Were you there when Eddie Olczyk made his famous speech? We want to hear from you. What were your thoughts? But going back to our question from earlier this morning, what team do you want to see the Jets play their first home game against? You know, you guys didn't really have a definitive answer. I was a little surprised about that, I got to tell you.
Just bring the team back.
You don't care who?
It's enough.
Yeah, but if it ends up being somebody like Florida.
I wanted to play the Gary Bettman in the first game.
Just for the 5-on-1?
Yeah.
I don't think that's going to happen, but it's a nice idea anyways. It is just time to, I mean, we just, last week, when we signed off the show, I said, you know, I didn't say we'll see you next Saturday because I thought that there was going to be an announcement and that we would see them earlier than Saturday. Well, here we are, and it's been a whole week, and still nothing. I mean, it is not sort of mind-boggling that we went a whole week with a deal that we all expect is done despite the protestations of some online and whatnot?
I think so because, I mean, I really want to see Mayor Sam Cates' conga dance. that's what I want to see.
Is Greg Salinger coming in a toga?
Well,
to offset Mayor Sam doing the conga?
The conga, yeah. You know, that's
you know what? This announcement could have been made Tuesday of last week. It could have been made Wednesday. And they're obviously concerned that it would overshadow the Kid Rock concert or whatever. So
that was your concern. Were you at the Kid Rock concert, Eze?
No.
No? Oh, I thought you were one of his backup dancers. You know, the guys who go like this, waving their arms in the air behind him or something. Ooh. It's not you?
Just trying to get you to go to Britney Spears, Drew.
I think I'm good on that one. I appreciate the offer, though, but I think I'm pretty good on that
one. You know, what I wanted to do this week was be able to break down the roster. I had that
ready
to go, for
I know.
Sake.
You wrote Richard wrote a PhD doctorate about the Atlanta Thrashers roster, and it's sitting there waiting to be posted because we haven't officially gotten word yet. Yeah. But, I mean, you can look forward to that at www.illegalcurve.com.
Yeah, thank you, Drew. And by the way, just in terms of getting back to the point I was at, I guess, in the first hour about this lack of announcement,
you're choking on your rage
again? Calm down here.
Okay. Calm yourself down before you get to your point.
We spoke about it off air. There's going to be excitement regardless of when the announcement is. I just think that it's been handled poorly throughout the process. And I think that the NHL, for whatever amount of money they're spending on many other things, they could spend a little bit more on PR. And seriously. And treating the people. Not only this also goes for the Atlanta angle, too, Drew.
Sure. They're in the middle of
They're having a rally and they're selling season tickets. Like, let's be real here. It's done. Tell them it's done. Yeah. Because while you're not... Everybody here knows it's done. So while you're not necessarily officially announcing it, going to Atlanta and telling them it's not exactly done yet is giving them some kind of unnecessary hope. And so both angles, it's hurting because, you know, no comment. Say no comment.
Yeah.
Or don't do the interviews. You don't have to do an interview.
No.
Like, why is Gary going on a Tampa radio station? Just don't do it, Gary. Wait for a week.
I mean, do it after.
I mean, they don't really care. Like, Tampa people don't need to hear Gary Bettman talk. It's not really relevant to anything that they're hoping for. They want their team to make it to the Stanley Cup Finals. So what's the interview being handed out for if you're going to say stuff like that? And I'm not saying that Gary's against a team coming here. Clearly, it must be somewhat in favor of it if a team is coming here. But the way this is handled, it's been unprofessional, and I think it needs to be said.
I don't have an argument on that point there at all, Richie. I do agree with you that I don't know why... I don't think they would jerk around any other city like this. It just seems like Winnipeg...
That's exactly right. And you have reputable journalists coming out and saying it's done, whether it be Ken Campbell, whether it be Stephen Brunt, whether it be Nick Kyprios, whether it be other people who've said that it's done, or there's details, or it's basically complete. Now, I realize that there's other angle in terms of True North trying to get the message out that there's not an announcement, and it's not... I understand that, and people have to do their jobs. But the NHL needs to do a better job of handling this overall, because the responsibility, to me, falls on their shoulders.
I'd like to go back to that Atlanta point that you just made. You know, about saying, you know, you gotta keep buying season tickets, or they're still selling season tickets. You know, it just seems as though that is, it's just really stepping on them while they're down a little bit.
Isn't it?
It really does seem to be.
Both angles, Drew.
Just say nothing. You know, that's how True North has sort of gone about their business and how they've been what we believe to be successful in getting an NHL team here.
Yeah.
But then why can't the NHL say no comment? Why can't everybody just say no comment? Why can't the politicians say no comment? Mm-hmm. Why, you know, if you've gone through all this process for the last number of years, who knows when the first conversation was?
A long time ago.
But all the standard line from True North has been no comment. Why deviate now?
Another thing is, let's talk about this. The fact is, regardless of what you say, and I know they did a huge rating on the Vancouver-San Jose game. They hit 10-point-something million. A third of the country is watching that game. And half the country is probably going to be watching the Stanley Cup Finals. But no matter what you say, this has certainly overshadowed a portion of the playoffs.
If this
consistently being a topic, between periods, instead of talking all the time about the product on the ice, you're talking about this. You're talking about ownership. You're going to the iDesk and talking about, and you're coming back to TSN, and you got one guy saying, it doesn't do the game, it doesn't serve the game well. It is not good for the game to continually be sending mixed messages to everybody. And you're toying with us. It's enough. One person's hearing one thing, one person's hearing another thing, one person's this. Clearly one person is, speaking on behalf of somebody, one person basically has the story. I mean, we know what's going on. We're not that stupid. But you're treating us like we're stupid.
There's a guy on Twitter just said that boo-hoo, that we should quit it with our whining.
Fine.
I mean, everybody's entitled to their opinion.
Go ahead.
It's not whining. It's frustration. I mean,
I think they're legitimate concerns.
Hold on. Everyone knows this city's getting an NHL team back. If you don't, then tell me why. Because if you're more of a reputable journalist than Stephen Brunt, then maybe I'll take you seriously. But if you can tell me why, and if you're going to tell me because the NHL and True North haven't announced it, they haven't announced it yet because they don't want to announce it yet. So we're not whining.
They want
we're
to announce it. They just can't do it without the NHL's
That's
approval.
Exactly
right. We're not whining.
That's
we're it. Complaining.
By the way, Ezzy, just to say, and Ezzy, Drew, if you need to clarify what I'm saying, I don't think you need to. This is not True North angle at all.
No, this
think
is
you know
the
that.
NHL.
That's just to clarify just people the out there. So this is NHL angle, completely
bad
NHL
PR.
Angle. It's been bad PR by the NHL throughout. True North's done exactly what they have to do. They're going to bring a team back here, and unbelievable. You can't beat it. From all angles, you can't beat that. And it's not the way they've handled it. They've handled it completely and totally how they should. It's the National Hockey League here, which has done it in numerous ways, which clearly held the Winnipeg as a fallback if Phoenix were to, and I'm supposed to believe that if they say Phoenix is going to be a workable market, then they go to Atlanta, they do an interview, it's not done yet, whatever it may be. I know it's selective wording, but again, it's still wording, and it still could be spun in any ways. And you're teasing people, both here and there. And you want to say boo-hoo? Fine. Okay, that's fine.
If a team comes back to Winnipeg, which it is, it's going to bring in more revenue than many American teams.
Yeah, course, oh, there's no doubt about it. We'll ask Michael Tracos about that in the next segment about he covers the Maple Leafs. So we'll ask him, is Maple Leaf Sports and Entertainment sick of subsidizing these struggling U.S. franchises? Because it's their money that's paying to keep those U.S. franchises afloat.
This also frustrates me, Drew, and I'm on a bunch of rants here. It frustrates me a lot, the fact that you had so much momentum, and I realize, again, you're going to maybe recapture it, but the city was so excited, and once again, the city is obviously as a complex, understandably so, that they just want it to be announced already.
Yeah.
I mean, people in the city want to buy tickets.
That's right. It's not like they're going to... People are ready. They have their credit cards out. They've spoken to their friends about how they're going to divvy up the package
True.
And everything
today,
else.
Today is May 28th. The draft is less than a month away. I want to look at the draft. I want to see what this team needs. I want to see who's in charge of the draft for this franchise. I want to talk about that kind of stuff. It's May 28th. It's going to be June 1st on Wednesday.
All I look at is I look at all the other commissioners in professional sports. And I look at all the other how they're all run, how all the other professional sports are run. And when a franchise needs to be moved, it's not done with the same level of hand-wringing and time-consuming and will they, won't they, everything else that the NHL seems to needlessly go through. And this doesn't put – anytime you move a franchise from one city to another, it's not good for your organization. It's not good for your league. I mean, if he had his druthers, David Stern would rather Seattle built an arena.
Absolutely.
And kept the Supersonics in Seattle. It didn't happen. He made the decision that he thought he had to make.
On that point, I re-listened to the Bill Daly interview that we did on the show in November.
Yeah.
I listened to it this week.
Available at www.illegalcurve.com.
Nice plug. I listened to it this week, and we asked him about Atlanta. And he went on Atlanta, but he went on and on and on about Atlanta. So if you don't think this was in motion months and months, if not years ago,
yeah.
And they still can't finalize it now? If you have to dot your I's and cross your T's, I mean, that gets done in time.
That's right. You don't make the – that's not going to be – these aren't deal breakers.
No.
I mean, the minor steps
– And the reports
the
are that
the
Atlanta-Winnipeg angle was done – long time ago, or fairly recently, and that there's a lot more squabbling over the relocation fee. That's greed.
Well, and just
That's greed.
And to
That's greed.
To further illustrate how much nonsense there is out there, everyone is talking about how Anson Carter should have been given more time to. It's now confirmed that he was out of. He hasn't been. That group wasn't interested months ago.
They didn't even explain. You know, when you have these potential franchise, these potential owners in Atlanta who aren't even exchanging financial information, that means that they. You know, Anson Carter. I mean, made some money as a hockey player.
Not that much.
Didn't make that much. So if he's done well for himself, he's done it as a successful businessman. Successful businessmen are successful because they don't make bad business decisions. Right. That's how it works. That's how they make their money. So Anson Carter can look back and say, oh, yeah, you know, I kicked the tires. I was interested in them, but he saw a bad business there. And he said, why would I invest in a bad business? I like my money. I don't want to lose all my money.
If you have 6 millionaires owning a franchise, however many there are in this ASG group, and they're not making money, why do you think they want to sell? I mean, this isn't, again, we get really deep into the analysis, but it's pretty simple.
That's right.
Why do you think Phoenix keeps changing ownerships?
You're not selling.
Why do you think nobody wants to buy the team in Phoenix? Why do you think nobody wants to buy the team in Atlanta? Because they lose money every year.
You're not selling NFL franchises that are for $800 million when their revenue is $1 billion a year, and your TV contract is huge. You're selling bad teams in bad hockey markets.
Back to the original point, which was that the NHL needs Winnipeg more than the Winnipeg needs the NHL. The NHL needs another team in Toronto more than another team in Toronto needs another team inside its city. The NHL needs another team in Quebec more than Quebec needs a team.
Yeah,
it's a fact. These teams are all bleeding money. The players must want it. It's going to increase revenues.
It just seems like it's at this point in time, it's his ego. It's his ego and his legacy.
And this is the thing, okay? You have all these cities who need you. If you know, in the context of a relationship, if somebody needs somebody, you don't act like if you need somebody, you don't act like the cocky person. And I don't need you. I mean, we know that Gary is losing tons of money. The owners want them out of there.
Yeah.
He needs these cities. We know that it's transparent. Why are fans in Canada especially, but and other markets too, being treated like this?
Disrespect is the only answer I can come up with. That's the only answer that I can actually come up with, and I don't understand it myself. Let's go to break. When we come back, Michael Trakos of the National Post. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're with you right up until 12 noon this afternoon. In case you missed any of the program earlier, we were joined by Martin Cash of the Winnipeg Free Press, former Winnipeg Jets head coach Bob Murdoch, and former Winnipeg Jet Eddie Olczyk. In case you missed any of those interviews, they will be available on iTunes. Search for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on iTunes.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
We're pleased to welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Michael Trakos, a writer for the National Post. Michael, welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Hey, thanks for having me, guys.
Thanks for joining us. We appreciate you giving of your time. Michael, you've been covering this story for the National Post in the last week or so, last little while, and you wrote an article sort of combining how IKEA found Winnipeg to be a viable market with the NHL's return to Winnipeg. You know, in the course of that article, what really stood out for you in terms of why the NHL can now make it happen, can now be a reality for Winnipeg?
Well, if IKEA believes in you, then obviously Gary Bettman's going to believe in you, right?
Yeah.
Like the two just go hand in hand in my mind. All kidding aside, I just think that Winnipeg is, and this is just an outsider's perspective, but when the take from Ontario is that Winnipeg has changed a lot from the time when the NHL was there in the 90s. I think now it's obvious that obviously the fan backing is there. We're seeing that in the rallies. We're seeing that just in the hunger in terms of, well, it's happening it's going to happen any day now. And it just seems like the more people I talk to in terms of who have fan sites or just the average guys on the street interviews, like everyone is just really supportive of this team. And then right now you've got the financial backing. You've got David Thompson, who's the richest man in Canada, bankrolling a team, along with Mark Chipman, who's just a highly respected man in the hockey community and in the business community, not just in Winnipeg, but all of Canada. So it just seems like all the pieces are there. You've got the fan support, you've got the business backing, and it just seems like this is the right time for Canada to get back a team.
Michael, we mentioned earlier that you're based out of Toronto and you cover the Leafs primarily. Is the return of the NHL in Winnipeg making a splash out there?
Oh, yeah. It's a huge splash. I think Canadians just love the fact that whether you're in Toronto, whether you're in Manitoba or Winnipeg, or if you're out west in British Columbia, I think that just another Canadian hockey team just resonates well with all Canadians. I know there's a lot of people in southern Ontario who would have liked to have a team in Hamilton or Kitchener-Waterloo or even a second team in Toronto, and I'm not saying that's not going to happen one day and that the NHL shouldn't come back here for a second team, because definitely I think Toronto can support it, but the fact that Winnipeg's getting a team, I just, as a Canadian myself, I'm happy about that, just because I know that there is a passion out there for hockey all across Canada, where in Atlanta or in some of these other southern markets, I just don't know if that passion exists. I know you've got a small fan base that is rabid out there, and I don't want to take anything away from them, because it's almost like when people say, okay, well, baseball doesn't work in Canada or basketball doesn't work in Canada. Well, there are fans of the sport, regardless of how many Canadians are playing baseball or basketball. And I think the same thing holds true in the States with the hockey. But it just makes perfect sense. And I think that just as a Canadian, I'm happy that hockey is finally coming back to Canada. And whether it's Winnipeg or Quebec City or anywhere else, I just like the fact that it's coming north of the border.
Michael, you wrote an article a couple of days ago titled "The Anti-Balsillia: Winning Friends in Winnipeg." Can you talk? I mean, that you base the article on Mark Chipman and how he's fairly anonymous. You know, everybody knows his name, but nobody really knows much about him. Can you touch on a little bit about what you learned about Mark Chipman while writing that article?
Yeah, the guy is very, very smart in terms of he knows what Balsillia did in trying to bring a hockey team to Canada and all the mistakes that Jim Balsillia made along the way, and that was by putting up a website saying make it seven in terms of let's have a seventh Canadian team, and putting season tickets up for sale before any deal was even close to being done, and already saying, okay, I'm going to buy a team with the intention of relocating it when there was still a need for having teams such as Pittsburgh and Nashville remaining in those markets. So Mark Chipman's smart in that respect, where he knew he's got to play by the NHL rules and basically do what Gary is saying to do. And basically that is, don't speak. Stay out of the press. Don't have your picture taken. Don't appear in newspapers. And very smart that way. And his partner, David Thompson, is even more of a recluse. You don't see David Thompson. All you do is you hear about how much money he has and possibly who he's dating at the moment, but you don't hear a whole lot from the man, other than he's just incredibly, incredibly rich. And I think Mark Chipman has, along the way, really just gained a reputation as being a guy who gets the job done, whether it's with the Manitoba Moose and getting the MTS Center built, or it's just even just small or smaller scale charitable endeavors, such as the Museum for Human Rights in Canada. He's just the guy that, if you're in the business community and you get a call from Mark Chipman, you're picking up the phone, and you know if he says something, his word is basically gold, or at least that's the intention, or that's the reputation he's kind of gained.
You mentioned about how, you know, Mark Chipman has sort of followed the rules laid out by Gary Bettman, not saying anything, keeping quiet, doing his business, you know, behind the scenes. What do you make of, you know, Bettman and to a lesser extent, Bill Daly running around the last 2 weeks trying to pour water, cold water on the fact that this deal is more or less done, and telling people in Atlanta that there's still a chance that they can have their team back and they should be buying season tickets and all of that, what we declare to be nonsense?
Yeah, I think it's nonsense, too, and I kind of question what the motivation is there. I think a lot of it is just almost damage control. There was a report out of the Globe and Mail last week that, or I'm trying to get my days set here, but obviously a deal was reported to, or an announcement was supposed to come last Tuesday. It never did, and I think the NHL gets kind of peeved a bit, just from the fact that a lot of us are writing, okay, well, this is done, basically. We're just going to be crossing T's and dotting I's. And they're trying to say, I guess it's just respectful to the folks in Atlanta. And you know what, from Gary Bettman's perspective, if this team does come to Winnipeg, and it's great news for Canada, and it's great news for Winnipeg and hockey fans here, but really it's an admission that a failure for Gary. And truly, it is a kind of a step backwards from his perspective, because going back to Canada does not help him secure a big deal with NBC. It doesn't help him get back onto ESPN. All it does is it brings hockey back to Canada. But if you're NBC right now, I think the last thing you're going to want is probably Winnipeg in a Stanley Cup final one day, even though that doesn't sound right to Winnipeggers and that doesn't sound right to Canadians. But let's be honest here. We've got the Stanley Cup final happening starting on Wednesday. And look at that schedule. How many games are actually on Saturday night?
Exactly. One.
One game. And why is that? It's because NBC has got the rights as well, and hockey doesn't sell well as a primetime event there. So why go up against basketball or other sports? On a Sunday, you got golf. This Sunday, you've got the Indy 500. So in terms of pecking order, hockey going back to Winnipeg doesn't help him in terms of cracking that U.S. market and becoming a real global event or a global sport for him. So, yeah, them leaving Atlanta, you know, it's just it's the first domino, and after that, who knows what's going to happen? Is it Columbus? Is it Tampa Bay even? Is it Florida? Like, who else is going to be coming to Canada? And if that keeps happening, I don't think that bodes well for Bettman's vision of the NHL.
Michael, does Southern Ontario expect to get the next team that comes to Canada, or is it kind of assumed that Quebec City is above them in the pecking order?
Yeah, I think Quebec City is definitely above them. There's a real, you're not going to get Brian Burke on the record on this, but you know that there's a real reluctance from the Toronto Maple Leaf Sports and Entertainment of allowing another team into Southern Ontario just because of that territorial rights. They don't want to go head-to-head with another team, and neither do the Buffalo Sabres, who are still fighting hard in that market. It's not an easy market for them as well. So I think definitely Quebec City is ahead of them, and I think there's a lot of U.S. cities that are probably above Quebec City. I don't think that just because we're going into Winnipeg that necessarily the next team to relocate is going to go to Canada. I think maybe Kansas City, Seattle, even Las Vegas or Houston are probably targets that Bettman is probably more inclined to go back to. That being said, Quebec City seems like a no-brainer, especially after Winnipeg is probably going to get a team just because there's a fan base there that is hungering as well for another NHL team, and to have a team come back. And it does make sense because you know you're going to fill the building on a nightly basis. But again, I go back to you go back to Canada, and it's almost a step backwards in terms of what the NHL is trying to do in terms of securing those really big TV deals.
Michael, we'll let you go on this one last question. You cover the Maple Leafs on a regular basis. You're very close to the team. You know, how sick is Maple Leaf Sports and Entertainment of propping up these struggling U.S.-based teams? You know, you mentioned, you know, Atlanta, of course, Florida, Tampa, Nashville, Columbus, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, well, I imagine, and they're probably sick of it just because there's such a it's a cash box there on Bay Street. But let's be honest, it's going to happen. And let's go back to Winnipeg here. They're going to have to pay a relocation fee to go back to Winnipeg. And the question is why? Well, that money is going right to fund the Phoenix Coyotes. So it's happening everywhere. And I guess Toronto and Montreal and I guess the New York Rangers are some of the bigger revenue teams. But, yeah, it's just a fact of the matter in the NHL. Some teams are making incredible amounts of money, and some teams aren't, and it's a big balance structure there, and it probably doesn't make a whole lot of sense.
Michael Trakos of the National Post, thanks very much for joining us this morning on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
All right, anytime, guys, and good luck on this.
Yeah, appreciate that. Thanks, Michael.
Thanks, Michael.
Let's head to break. One final segment coming up. It's going to feature cheers and jeers for, I think, the first time in about a month or so.
Yeah.
So, you know, stay tuned for that. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're wrapping up in the next few minutes today's episode. Is there a reason why you're standing next to me, Richard? You're reading Twitter. Okay, good answer. You have a computer over there, you know, that does have the Twitter capabilities.
Up on this one. Doesn't really work.
Oh, okay. Anyways, welcome back to the
Drew,
show.
You're getting a little productive of your Twitter space.
Drew, you got two computers. I can't look at one.
First of all, it's not my Twitter space. It's my personal space that he's invading. And I don't really appreciate. Anyways, that's okay. Welcome back to the show. In case you missed any of the program, it will be available for downloading on iTunes. We heard from a number of fabulous guests earlier today. Martin Cash of the Winnipeg Free Press was kind enough to join us.
Excellent.
Yeah, he was fabulous. We heard Bob Murdoch, former head coach of the Winnipeg Jets, Eddie Olczyk, former player in Winnipeg, and we just heard from Michael Trakos of the National Post.
Mm-hmm.
Guys, you know, I said this last, I mean, I can't believe that this is going to go another week till next Saturday without an announcement. The Cup Finals start Wednesday. If they don't announce it by Wednesday, are they going to wait? Could they possibly wait till after the Cup Finals?
They could possibly, but that would probably be the dumbest
the
thing
board,
ever.
The Board of Governors meet, I think the last, I think Game 7 could be June 15th. Somewhere,
yeah,
I think,
meets on the 21st.
Yeah.
And the Board of Governors meets on the 21st. So if they need the season ticket test drive that we've been hearing about, are they saying that they're giving the city of Winnipeg 4 days to prove to the Board of Governors that, we're a viable hockey market?
Yes.
It doesn't all, it doesn't make any sense. I mean, there's so much of the story doesn't make any sense. I mean,
there won't be a ticket drive.
Logic's out the window years ago here.
I mean, you know, then you get the, like you said, then the hockey, then the NHL draft comes up very quickly thereafter.
And that's what people should be focusing on. If you're fans right now, you want to focus on what the team can do in the draft and what the team can do in free agency and gain momentum in terms of interest. Obviously, they need to get their management guys in order. I mean, I don't, they might be doing that and unveil it all at once. Whatever it may be, that should be the focus of the fans right now. And it would be even if they were getting the no comments back to that. But regardless, I would assume it needs to be done by, I mean, I assumed before it was going to be done by Wednesday, Thursday. Obviously, a bunch of other things are happening behind the scenes. I don't think the deal's falling apart. I think the deal's done. It's just a matter of getting everything in order for when the announcement's going to be under NHL control. That will be, you'd hope, would be before Wednesday because that's when the finals is. And the finals could be 2 weeks long, as you said. Could go to June 15th. And the vote's the 21st. I think the draft is the 23rd and 24th. They're right around there in St. Paul.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you obviously can't announce it after the draft. So that seems to be their deadline because nothing else seems to be a deadline.
It just seems like it's never ending at this point. I mean, it just, I mean, I know that we just want closure. It's not so much to ask. You wouldn't I mean, I honestly
I understand the rumors have been going on about Winnipeg for so long. We're excited and happy that it's going to happen. And we're really, really, really excited. Don't get me wrong. I just think that ego's got in the way of this whole story. That's all I'm saying. And I think that's a fact. I think it's absolutely a fact. You can debate it all you want. Obviously, we're basing that on some speculation. Don't get me wrong. But we're also basing on what we're provided. If we had full disclosure of the story right now, it would be a whole different ballgame.
Somebody should be writing a book about this.
It's book-worthy.
It's definitely book. I mean, the saga. I mean, over the last number of years, the twists and the turns and everything else and the first meeting. And, I mean, you know, it was 10 days ago almost. Thursday night, people at Portage and Main were out there. I mean,
and the excitement will be back, but it's been lost for the time being.
It just is, it's a peak and a valley, and I mean, you want it, based on my understanding, you always want to make your announcement when the anticipation is absolutely at its highest point.
Redfield lost T-bomb. That.
We didn't actually talk about the fact that, interesting, in this new ESPN book coming out. Did you read that by Bruce Daubigan?
You're talking about the book by Tom Shales.
Yeah, but there's Batman quotes in the book. I don't know if you read the Bruce Daubigan piece. You want to pull it up right now? The Globe and Mail Bruce Daubigan piece.
Computer's acting up a little bit. I'm not sure.
Gary Bettman saying, essentially, do you know who I am? I shut down a league for an entire year to get what I want.
I don't know if that's something you'd want to brag about. That wasn't really a positive thing.
Especially to ESPN, because ESPN doesn't give a damn who Gary Bettman is.
Well, and the problem is you're not on ESPN, and if you're not on ESPN, they cut your programming in terms of your highlights, in terms of your coverage. I think they're down 30% since they got off
ESPN. Let's be honest here. It wasn't Gary Bettman's fault that we lost an NHL team. He's done a lot of really good things for the NHL. The lockout wasn't good for him or anybody. It wasn't his fault that there was a lockout, but that lockout was not...
Where ticket prices gone? That
lockout was not something that the NHL benefited from at all. I mean, attendance went up and fan interest went up in Canada for sure. But I don't think that they gained fans, and that was a positive thing in the U.S. at all.
Well, you know what? I mean, it's in everything. What about the Canadian TV deal is going to be much bigger than the American deal? Why doesn't Canada get to dictate when the games are on?
Also, the U.S. TV deal is done now.
I know, it's 10 years now.
It's done. Yeah. It's locked in. It's the I's are dotted and the T's are crossed. It's done. Here's the quote. Bettman is quoted in saying, and the book is called "Those Guys Have All the Fun Inside the World of ESPN." Bettman is quoted as saying, "People say, this is a quote from Bettman. People say it's ESPN. You had to be on ESPN. You know what? I was also the first commissioner to shut down a sports league for an entire year. We weren't going to be treated the way we were being treated."
Oh, so this is what we want to put our trust in.
Is his ego just out of control?
That's what we want to put our trust in.
Not a matter of trust, but it's just, I mean, is. Why are you proud that you shut down the NHL?
That's disconcerting.
I don't think that the lockout was. It's been about 6-7 years now. I don't think it's been so revolutionary that the NHL is all hunky dory. You got a lot of struggling markets.
Sure do.
So I mean, I don't know what you're so proud about there that you shut down the entire NHL and you haven't been within a whiff of ESPN in a number of years.
You signed a TV deal that wasn't actually any guaranteed money.
Yeah, it's like congratulations. We'll broadcast your product and maybe we'll see a penny from it, and maybe not, and we'll make it second rate. And horse racing will be more important. So Gary, maybe check back on the ego a little bit there, buddy. That's all I'm saying. Let's go. It's time. Let's wrap it up the show. Cheers and jeers.
cheers.
Congratulations.
He's brilliant.
He's a good guy.
And jeers.
No, not good enough.
He's a bad boy.
I never seen something sticks like this.
Surprisingly not good.
Ezra Ginsberg, if you can get off your BlackBerry for a second, cheers or jeers?
I'm going to cheer Doug Waite. He retired this week.
Nice.
Had a long career, and he was offered a position as, I believe, an assistant coach and advisor to Garth Snow.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It kind of went a little bit under the radar because of the fact that the playoffs are going on, and there's a lot of NHL returning to Winnipeg news. So he's been a really good player, kind of struggled a little bit towards the end of his
career,
but... you know, played a lot of hockey for the American team, was there for the 96 World Cup.
Yep.
Yeah. So,
he was one of my favorites, Dougie.
Very good career, exactly.
I mean, 39 on the Oilers is how I remember him, and one of the best passers of his time. Just a tremendously creative player. Never really looked to shoot, but had a great vision and was a great passer. My cheer this week goes to Brian Rafalski. People seem to unnecessarily say that players are always all about the money, all about the money, all about the money. Well, Brian Rafalski, first of all, I don't agree with that, but second of all, Brian Rafalski had $6 million on the table. He chose to make sure his health was okay and he could spend family time. And he left that on the table, $6 million, and he retired from the National Hockey League. One of the great stories of perseverance, great interview, great respect. There's nothing but, people should hold him in nothing but high esteem and a great career.
I'm going to wrap up cheers and jeers. I'm going to cheer Joe Thornton. I thought he had the best playoff in the three series that he's had in his entire career. I didn't think he was an albatross on the team. I thought he actually was a solid contributor. And then I'm going to cheer him for acknowledging the moment and playing Game 5. I mean, he had a separated shoulder, so I mean, he gritted it out and he had an impact in Game 5. So kudos to Joe Thornton. I think that you're getting that monkey off your back slowly but surely. So I think he deserves some credit for that.
No, Drew, I think that's fair. When we criticize somebody, we give him cheers. Not cheers. We talked about him a couple weeks ago.
Yeah,
if we're going to criticize somebody, we're going to give him credit when credit's due.
Exactly right. That's it for this Saturday morning here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We'd like to express our thanks to Martin Cash of the Winnipeg Free Press. Express our thanks to Bob Murdoch, former head coach of the Winnipeg Jets, Eddie Olczyk of Comcast Sportsnet in Chicago, also a former Winnipeg Jet, and Michael Trakos of the National Post for joining us this week. You can follow us on Twitter, @IllegalCurve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. Always remember to check out www.IllegalCurve.com. It's updated multiple times per day with all of your relocation news. And, of course, we're going to be front and center as soon as the story breaks. You can remember to always check out www.IllegalCurve.com. In case you missed any of this program and you want to catch it later, it'll be available for download on iTunes. Search for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on iTunes. Big thank you to Alex for getting us on and off the air so well today. A big thank you to Michael Remus operating the R Desk, where there was a flourishing hockey chat going on, I must say. There was furious activity in the chat room. A big thank you to my two colleagues on this program, Ezra Ginsberg and Richard Pollock. My name is Drew Mindell, and, well, we'll for sure be back next Saturday. We might be back before then. We'll see. As the announcement goes, we'll be back. But you know that if it is Saturday, it is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Been listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Join us again for serious hockey talk Saturday morning at 9, exclusively on Sports Radio 1290.